I'm Michelle.
I'm Chris.
And I'm SP from the Starling Tribune,
a podcast member of the Gonna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts at GonnaGeek.com.
And get ready because geekiness begins in...
3, 2, 1.
This is the official GonnaGeek.com show. Here we're a bunch of geeks talking about geeky things. Each week we run down the latest news and happenings in the world of geek. These are your hosts for the show, Steven.
But what if I'm in the mood for a T-Swift story?
Chris.
I've heard the X is going to give it to you.
And SP.
That's how we roll on Gonna Geek on Monday night. We get crazy!
Gonna Geek Productions presents the official GonnaGeek.com show.
Welcome back to the official GonnaGeek.com show. This is episode 240. I am Stephen Jondren. With me, of course, is the Triple X here, Chris Farrell.
So that makes me Vin Diesel or Ice Cube. I'm confused.
That makes you pornography. We also have Stargate Pioneer.
It is the unofficial start to summer in Canardia.
It
Happy
is.
Summer, boys. It and is. It's a beer cast.
Ah, oh, now I gotta like play the bump so that I can go get a beer, but maybe next time. But yeah, we are here today with the first of the summer because it is the May long weekend here in Canardia in Canada. So if you are in Canada, welcome to your long weekend. And if you are not in Canada, just hold tight. A few days away, you will be in your long weekend, kicking back, having a brewski, and hopefully not listening to this, because you should start off your long weekend on a really good note.
This is the good note.
Weekend starts tomorrow.
Oh, wow. We are part of the Gonna Geek Network. If you're not familiar with the Gonna Geek Network, there is a lot of amazing geeky content there, a lot of great geeky podcasts. Some of them are video shows like this one. Some of them are just pure audio, but you should definitely check that out at GonnaGeekNetwork.com. I'm really proud of the network we've built over there, so please do check that out. But let's go ahead and roll into some news. Here we go. So in the chat, by the way, I am being congratulated by
Indeed.
Kent.
Yes, congratulations. Indeed.
Kent is saying congratulations on the wedding of your queen's grandson, to which I say that I would very much, very much support any movement towards getting us out of the Commonwealth. I do not agree with the royals, and I don't like the royals. So there you go. There's your political facts.
What do you mean?
Some Canadians.
They brought tons of tourism to your area, British Columbia, last year.
Some Canadians.
Not Harry, but his brother.
I know, but some Canadians are going to be like mad at me now. It's going to happen. I guarantee Neil's going to send me hate mail.
So you're going to get a tersely worded email.
It will be. Neil. Actually, with Neil, he'll just come and slash my tires. I know he will.
So, guys, I got to ask you a question. Who's your favorite, Kate or Megan? Because you got to have a favorite between the two.
Pippa. Pippa is my favorite.
Princess Vespa, because the Vespa and Lone Star wedding was the real royal wedding that I cared about.
I don't know. Megan really pulled off the ceremony. As you guys know, I actually watched it live. I'm intrigued by the royals. And yeah, I have to go with Megan here. But Kate Middleton, by the way. I think she's got the edge. Not only that, but she's going to be queen one day. So yeah, kind of like that. Stephen has left because I started talking about the royals. If you want to hound Stephen about not liking the royals, you can go ahead and hit him up on his Twitter account. That's at Stephen Jondreau on Twitter, or Stephen at GonnaGeek.com. Send your hate mail there. This is the one time that I'm going to say send your hate mail there. And he got a beer. He got a beer to celebrate the royal wedding.
So, Chris, you had Xbox news, right?
How do I follow up this riveting royal wedding news and talk about a gaming system? I just don't know, guys. How do I transition to something people actually care about or should care about?
You could have watched the royal wedding on your Xbox. It was streaming all over the place.
Yeah, I could have, but I had better things to do, like play video games.
And not watch the royal wedding.
You were probably asleep when the royal wedding happened.
I was up at 6:30 in the morning on Saturday.
Well, why weren't you watching it then?
Because I have self-respect, we fought for our independence over 200 years ago, and we're free, so I don't have to watch that BS.
Megan is an American!
She is an American. Actually, you know what?
So?
I am anti-royal here. We've talked about it before, and thus, you two both should... We're most responsible to watch. That's true, because there was an American involved. There's no Canadian, so out of all three of us here, you had the more authentic tie.
Wait, who's still under the Queen's banner? It's not me.
I think you actually had a legal obligation to watch the
wedding. You were supposed to watch it. You had to have royal pudding and all that other stuff, according to what South Park taught me. Royal pudding.
All right. Well, let's talk about Xbox controllers.
So let's talk. This is actually a really cool story. I started reading about it late last week, and it warmed my cold, dead heart when I saw what Microsoft was doing. Last week, it came out, the Xbox Adaptive Controller. This is a controller designed for gamers with disabilities. There's a lot of cool videos that both Microsoft, Ars Technica, and a bunch of their tech blogs have put out that show how this works. Let's talk a little bit about what the Xbox Adaptive Controller is. So every gamer that has a disability faces a unique challenge for a lot of reasons, one of which is there's not a lot of accessibility-focused peripherals for the console. You might have seen a lot of hack-together versions that allow people to play things. Ben Heck, the legendary modder, excuse me, was well known for making a one-handed Xbox 360 controller so that someone who didn't have a left hand or had a disabled left hand could play completely with their right hand. But these things are very expensive, building custom peripherals so people can game. What Microsoft has done is they are putting out what is called the Xbox Adaptive Controller, a device they created to address the needs of gamers for whom ordinary gamepads aren't an option. So what is this controller? Well, essentially, it's a pair of gigantic programmable buttons, an oversized directional pad, and 19 3.5mm jacks on the back of the device that will tie into a huge variety of assistive devices that are already existing and being used, things like blow tubes, pedals, and other Microsoft-made accessories. Why is this important? Well, when you go and look at the back of this adaptive controller, there is a 3.5mm jack for every button on the Xbox controller, A, B, X, Y, right bumper, left bumper, all of those things, you can plug any kind of sensor you need in there. So this becomes a highly customizable rig. You can put in foot pedals, you can put in large buttons, you can put in the blow tubes. It's really cool. Seeing is believing on this. If you get a chance, there's an article in our show notes that takes you to Microsoft's page that shows this. Some of the rigs that they've put together for folks, it's really just kind of mind-boggling how they're able to make everything work and make it so folks who aren't fully able-bodied are able to play games again. What's really important about this, though, is this accessory, it looks like an official accessory. It is an official accessory. It's sold by Microsoft. It links up wirelessly to your Xbox One. Oh, yeah, and also your Windows 10 PCs.
Nice.
So any PC game you would play that recognizes an Xbox controller, the adaptive controller will work with that also. So what does that mean? Any one of those Microsoft game, anywhere games they have, like Gears of War, Sea of Thieves that play on both PC and Xbox, that'll work. But also, more importantly, many Steam games support controller use. Many games that aren't on Steam but are just on PC, like Overwatch, also support controller use. If you're disabled or have a disability, you can use this controller and your variety of switches and plugs and things like that, and your computer will see this as an Xbox controller. So you don't have to hack anything together. It's plug and play. It's incredibly interesting. Now, it's not meant to be an all-in-one solution. It's more of like a hub that allows people to set things up how they need to, but it's impressive. Go and look at some of the videos and the articles that are out there. Microsoft put together about a 6-minute long YouTube video that shows the research that went into doing it, the test studies they did with gamers, where there's a kid who has like a completely disabled left hand and they show his rig, another kid who has brain damage from a car accident who plays with his brother now.
Very cool.
Being able to use these adaptive controllers. It's really neat. It builds on stuff that Microsoft's already put in place before. They have the Copilot feature, if you guys hadn't heard of that now, which means you can basically put a second controller that works as player one. So that was a way you could get around a lot of those issues someone might have had in the past, is you could help someone by hitting the right side buttons on your controller, things like that. Another final thing on this that's really cool, if you haven't played on the Xbox before, they have an application on there that allows you to remap buttons on the controller. This also works with the adaptive controller, meaning you pull up this application, You can change how sensitive your buttons are. You can remap buttons on this controller. It's super configurable. That's the important thing. And here's where it gets really cool. $99 when it goes on sale. It Wow. becomes the brains of putting these things together. Microsoft by no means is going to make tons and tons of money off of this. And I don't think that was their goal. Their goal was, as Phil Spencer put it, make it so anyone can play games. And I think that's what they're doing here. And I think there's going to be a lot of positive press that comes out of it. And like I mentioned at the top of this, people like me who have a cold, dead heart read some of these articles and saw some of these YouTube videos and saw the excitement on the face of some of these young gamers who are finally getting to game again and went, this is pretty awesome. So kudos to you, Microsoft. Kudos to you, Phil Spencer, on a separate note. I can't remember which article I read it in, but they interviewed him. He's the head of the Xbox division at Microsoft. He basically said, if any other vendors or developers or hardware providers want to come in and learn what we've done on this adaptive controller, come on in. We'll teach you everything we learned. We'll tell you lessons learned. Nice. We'll show you why we made the design choices we did. He goes, it doesn't have to be an officially Xbox licensed product that comes out of it. He goes, we just want to make it so that everyone has the opportunity to play games. And that is awesome. Phil Spencer has been well known for, despite running this Xbox division, not being all Microsoft centric on it. Like, he plays Destiny 2 on a PlayStation, for instance. So
wow,
a great statement coming out from Phil Spencer, a great tool coming out. I wish I could tell you when the launch date is. Sometime this year is what they've said so far. Rumors have been June, July timeframe.
That's not bad. That's pretty reasonable.
So this is not the first time that a controller has been marketed, or an adapter to the controller has been marketed for the disabled and the people that wanted a little advantage when they're gaming too, because you could use it for that way as well. You guys remember the story about the PR firm Christmas time 2011 about the Avenger controller adapter? You guys remember that?
I don't know.
Yeah, so it was a big deal with the Penny Arcade, and this marketing guy who was named David Cristoforo, I believe is how you say his name. And it was a nightmare because this one kid just wanted to know if the controller was coming in for his Christmas present. And this guy just totally railed on this disabled kid, and the Penny Arcade picked it up. It became an internet sensation and viral. He lost all credibility. He doesn't work in that business anymore, and for good reason. He really doesn't deserve to work in that sort of business if you're not going to have good customer service, even if your product is going to be delayed beyond Christmas. So I'm glad that Microsoft itself is taking control of, no pun intended there, of this market, because having disabled people, not necessarily kids, but disabled people being able to play video games, why not? I mean, they're so fun. I hope that lots of people get to use this.
Absolutely. And the more inclusive we can be, the better, for sure, with this sort of stuff. And I got to say that I'm really happy that it is a Microsoft genuine product, because we've seen how third parties have attempted to do things before and sometimes they just fall short, which yields basically no traction. Something like this, it's right behind Microsoft. It's going to be awesome. So, Chris, thanks for bringing that news story. That's fantastic. And we're going to say that you are personally responsible for this controller.
Sure, we can go with that. I'm just glad Microsoft put this out there. They shared it with everyone. I'm just happy I was able to share it with folks on this show today. Seriously, if you get a chance, SP put the link in the chat room. Go and take a look at this in-depth article Microsoft put out there. It's incredible what they've done there, and they start talking about the design decisions that went into things. It's really cool.
For sure. All right, speaking of Stargate Pioneer, can you please tell us how a pioneering satellite fell?
Sure. This is actually an update over what we discussed back in
Gunna Geek. I cut off Chris's facepalm, so we better make sure the audience gets that. So you better facepalm again. I kind of switched videos.
Take
so
two.
Do you want single hand or double hand?
Let's go with both. Here. Let's go with both on this for the video viewers. Let's make it. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's pretty good. If you're listening to the audio side of things, you really got to go over to youtube.com/GunnaGeek. It's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. You're
this
missing
is
out.
Riveting for these audio listeners right now to hear me shake my head on camera. You hear the gravel rolling around in there?
We could do. We could turn it into a play by play. Okay, do it again, Chris.
Chris puts two hands up on his head. He lays them on his head, and now his head shakes.
So there we go. That's what we'll do. We'll do a secondary track. It'll be the descriptive audio. So that's what
descriptive
it'll be.
I think actually it might have been heard had Chris actually had hair on his head to run his hands through.
Hey, man, it's because my brain is expanded and pushed the hair follicles out to make room.
Whoa, I've been working on that one a long time. So let's go ahead.
I grew up with my dad telling me that one.
That's funny. Let's go with your news, though, SP. Go ahead. Continue.
Sure. So this is actually an update of what we talked about back in Gonna Geek episode number 160. Yes, we're talking about the Rossi X-ray Timing Explorer. And on April 30th, after more than 20 years in space, this X-ray telescope based in space re-entered and burned up in the Earth's atmosphere. It was decommissioned in 2012, but the instrument had spent its lifetime probing environments of black holes and neutron stars in the X-ray wavelengths, revealing new insights into these dense gravitational objects. Now, the Rossi X-ray Timing Explorer relayed its last scientific observation to the ground on January 4th, 2012, and was powered down the very next day. By the way, all of the data collected by Rossi is open to the public at NASA's Goddard's High Energy Astrophysics Science Archive Research Center. So you can go ahead and grab that. It's open to the public. Now, when NASA originally retired Rossi in 2012, it was predicted to fall to Earth sometime between 2014 and 2023. But Rossi, don't worry, it did not hit Stephen's house this time. There was no warning that it was going to come down there. It entered the Earth's atmosphere over the tropics without harming anyone and honestly just burned up. It was not all that big. So, yeah, that's an update. We had a satellite that came down and once again did not hit Stephen's house, but we had talked about it before on Gonna Geek number 160. So if you want to learn out of that space telescope or any space telescope, you can hit me up at, what is it, snasa.space.
Snasa.space. That's hoping I renewed that, of course. What was the name of it again?
The Rossi X-ray Timing Explorer.
He was that character on Friends. We were on a break, right? His name is Rossi, right?
Sure.
It was a joke.
He was a paleontologist, by the way.
That's true. Let me ask you this question, Stargate Pioneer. What is it going to take for a satellite to fall on my house?
Well, we could actually make that happen if you are so desire.
Oh, no. You know,
make sure your insurance coverage is up to date.
I just need to make sure I'm aware so that I can go and start streaming in the cul-de-sac so that we can see it come down. It's good for ratings, I think.
Just put your drone up for it.
That's true.
I was going to say, I think the drones actually can stream directly to Facebook now. You need to link that up.
Oh, that would be pretty badass. Maybe we should go ahead and make that happen over your house. You've got more drones than me.
Sure, I'm up for it. I need a new house. I don't want to take care of this one anymore. So, yeah, let's do it.
Assuming your insurance covers it, of course. So what we've learned from this, though, is that we here at the GunnaGeek.com show have been around so long that we have followed up on episodes many, many years later. Is that right?
Is it many, many? Or is it, let's see, what was the date on 160?
I don't know. Oh. You should know this stuff by now.
I just knew the episode 240? Number. Yeah, so it's like a year ago. It's not years and years.
It's many.
That's more than that. It's like 80 episodes.
September 8th, 2016 was when episode 160 came out, which you can check out at www.geeks.link/160. And also in that episode featured Samsung Galaxy Note 7 news, hint, they're catching fire, the recent SpaceX explosion, and two upcoming Netflix series, Bill Nye and the Mythbusters build team. Check out all of that in episode 160 at geeks.link/160. Next up in the news, by the way, you like that promo for an old episode, we've got Google Duo update. If you're not familiar with Google Duo, think of this as Google's like 20th attempt at FaceTime for Android. They've tried a whole bunch of different things, and that's what this is the closest we've got, because the app is natively on Google now. It integrates, so if you're within an actual phone call and the other user has the Duo registered, you go ahead and you press the button and it comes through right within your call. You can switch over to that. So it's kind of the closest that we've got. And yeah, apparently there's going to be a screen share option coming to Google Duo. It is just rolling out. And this is something that we've not seen a lot with video platforms in the Android world. So when you are in a duo call, you're going to now be able to go ahead and activate this. There's going to be a new icon next to the camera switch icon. And once it's tapped, it's going to give a warning, of course, that says Duo will start capturing everything that's displayed on your screen. And then the person you're sharing this call with will be able to see, apparently, everything going on your screen. So how cool is that?
What I'm hearing here is I should not push the call Steve and John Drew button on my Google Duo right now.
Well, you could, but I don't know that I'd answer. I actually pulled my phone out. I'm sure the video viewers could see that because I was pretty sure that's what you were about to do. So
I'm going to do it then because we know Steven likes to call. So I'm calling one Steve and John Drew right now.
Hey, cool. Look, I'm getting a call from Chris.
Look, it's me.
Oh, hey, Chris, how's it going? Hey, what's up? Long time no see. How are you?
Well, the audio is going to go nuts. Nuts, I say.
I hung up. By the way, if you've not used Duo before, it's actually pretty stable. It's my go-to when I am on the road now. I find that out of all the other video apps that I got, remember, my wife has an iPhone. It does seem the most stable out of them. And it's got this weird feature that you can turn on, which the kids love, where when you're calling the person who's receiving the call, if you have this feature on, will actually see what you're doing. So they can sit there and watch you make a face or whatever the heck you're doing before you phone. So it is available on Apple. Yeah, SP is holding up a Samsung, but you can get Duo on in
SP,
Apple.
SP, make sure that doesn't explode. And remember, we learned that Galaxy S7 sometimes explode 10 episodes
it's a Note
ago or
3.
Whatever.
I think we're safe. It's a Note 3. But I wanted to bring that up because you were talking about sharing app or sharing screens and stuff like that. This was the first phone that I had, and I haven't used it in a while, that actually had the ability to do the dual screens on it. And right. I know it's been around for a while, but this was the first phone that did that, the Samsung Note 3. So I think it's great that they're now integrating that into calling.
Yeah, no screen, but the screen sharing is where you can actually share the screen with somebody viewing it. So the person you're on the call with will be able to see everything on your screen. Everything,
so when you've got to do tech support for mom in the future, it makes life easier. Like, here, I'm going to share my screen and show you these things, that kind of stuff.
Right. But if you have the ability to do multiple screens, can you share the one screen and keep the other one on the call?
That's a good question. If you were using, I don't know if it'll work with the split screen, but I know from what I've read, it's going to essentially make it so that you can just sort of back out of Duo. When the Duo call will still be going. So the video call will be going. It'll be sort of hidden in the background. There'll probably be a little bubble. I think there's a bubble usually when you go out of it. But then they will see everything you're doing. So if you were to pull it up and do that support like Chris was talking about, they'll be able to actually see exactly what you're doing on the screen. So I think it'll be handy in some situations like that. Or maybe it'll just, like, if you've ever wanted to just show somebody a picture without actually having to send it, that'll be kind of cool too, where you can just go, hey, yeah, I got this cool picture. I know you don't want to receive it on yours because then it's going to automatically go to your cloud. So you just go and you just show. So it'll be neat. I think there'll be a lot of opportunity.
So I wonder if this is what Google is using for a lot of their phone support and stuff. Like if you have a Pixel phone, you get Pixel support and there's a button on your options page. It's literally contact support, and it does a video call with them. They're able to show you things on your phone. They're able to, if you give permission, take control to help you change settings. I wonder if that's all built on Duo.
You know, the other thing that I wonder is if the feature is only going to work Androids. Like, I know, I'm guessing it won't do screen share on an Apple user, but will
I don't think Duo exists for iOS.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I use it with my wife when I'm on the road. So
my mistake. Yeah. I apologize. Yeah, you just said that. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. No worries. I didn't put it together clearly, but I'm wondering though if it's going to be able to work at all. Like maybe she won't even be able to receive it. I'll have to test it once it shows up on my phone and see if it works, and report back. But this is a new feature, so I'm glad to see that they're investing more into this app. I'm still not wild. Yes, but for the audio viewer, SP is holding up Git Duo on his Apple, his iPhone. I'm just going to call them Apples now from now on his Apple.
Got an Apple on it.
That's true. I am, though, really happy to see them investing in this, but I'm still not wild about the way that they've split their apps totally, and we still have Hangouts. We have that other messenger service, and then we have Duo. Like, it would be nice to see a little bit more integration. Allo's the messenger I was thinking of. Allo. That thing's a piece
I forgot about that one.
That's a piece of junk.
Yeah, it was crappy.
All right, let's move on to our extra news section here. Stargate Pioneer, why don't you tell me a little bit about what we have going on in the world of space, aside from the article, of course, that you did mention to us previously in the show, but I know you have more stuff.
Curiously enough, this is also another update from Gonna Geek episode number 160, because we were talking about SpaceX exploding. Well, guess what? We have another opportunity for that to happen. And that's because Elon Musk is saying that in 2019, he is going to reuse one of the new Block 5 Falcon 9s within 24 hours. Guys, that is amazing. The whole thing behind the space shuttle, which was developed in the late 70s, first flew in 1981, was its reusability. It never achieved that reusability. And he's talking about reusing the first stage of a Falcon 9 within 24 hours. It's saying that they could fly it 10 times like that before it needs major inspections, and perhaps 100 or more with actual maintenance work. This is going to be great. They're going to build 50 of these, 30 to 50 of these, and then they're going to switch production over to the BFR, the Big Falcon Rocket, and the 100-person spaceship to bring people to Mars. This is all great. SpaceX, Elon Musk, you're doing some amazing stuff. I think we're going to see one of these explode. I really do. But in the end, he's going to fix it, and we're going to move on.
Yeah, it's probably likely that we will, but I have to say that I really do like, as long as people are safe, how much Elon keeps pushing things for the reusability. I just think that that's really cool, and it helps. If we can be able to relatively easily do things like 24-hour reusing rockets, think about the longevity on a bigger cycle on reusing rockets, how much we're going to be able to save on that, and how much more confidence we'll have if he's reusing rockets within 24 hours.
This is amazing, guys. I when I saw this, I was like, wow, I can't believe that this is actually going to happen. He's going to push for it to actually happen. I don't know if it'll be successful, and he'll do it a few times. So we have a great opportunity in 2019 and 2020 to see another amazing thing. This will be as amazing, I think, as the Falcon Heavy launch that occurred with Spaceman.
I once reused my underwear within 24 hours, so that was an accomplishment.
Did you turn it inside out?
Inside out?
Yes, I did.
Or just so. Backwards?
I just kept wearing them for 2 days. So
I mean, because you can wear it normally, then wear it backwards, then flip it inside out, frontwards, then backwards. You can get 4 days out of a pair of undies, man.
Mm. I've never done that.
No, I just didn't change. But next up in the extra, we had a little part about Valve. If you're not familiar with Valve, Valve is the company that is behind Steam. And over the last few days, apparently the developers and publishers of H Games, which are adult visual novels, have been hit with takedown notices from the world of Valve. From out of the blue, certain games are now being deemed in violation of Steam's rules and guidelines for appropriate content on the platform. So Valve is now threatening to remove these games, which means that clearly they have a direction in mind of what they want to do with what's being distributed on Valve. So it'll be interesting to see, because if they are targeting people all of a sudden, quote, out of the blue, I think that that means they've probably within their inner workings had a focus mandate for a reason, and it means that they probably have a direction that they want to go with their catalog. So Chris, does this bug you? Where else are you going to get your adult visual novels?
The internet.
Is it
just Google adult visual novels and I bet it shows up. I'm just saying guys, I have a good feeling about this.
I'm not going to Google that, but yeah, I have high confidence that Chris is correct.
Well, you should find out and report back on a future episode like you followed up twice today.
I'm not going to follow up with that one.
And finally, in our extra section here, we had a story about the Google Pixel 3. Allegedly, there's more rumors happening. Google has, they released an update that ended up apparently talking about a Pixel 3, and there might be a notch. I'm not going to go into too many details about this because it still is in the early rumor stages. It's not even worth getting into the specifics, but just know it's looking like the Pixel 3 is shaping up to be on board with the notch, which is not surprising at all, considering with the Pixel 1, they made fun of Apple for no headphone jack, and then the Pixel 2, they got rid of the headphone jack. So that's what Google does. They take the punch, or they I don't know. They basically will tell Apple that they're terrible and then go and do the same thing. That's what they'll do.
That's how I roll, man.
When are you going to get yourself a Pixel, Stargate Pioneer?
Hashtag no notch.
When are you going to get a Pixel?
I don't know. I might not. I'll leave the option open for right now. I'm enjoying the Apple architecture still.
Ah, well, we hope that you do end up getting into the wonderful Android ecosystem so that we can share you our screens all the time. Hint, I have an adult novel I want to share with you.
Ooh, hot.
I'll just go out and buy one right now.
All right, well, let's go ahead and move into SP Space Symposium. Oh, by the way, before we get to SP Space Symposium, I should let you know that at the end of the show, we have results from a poll that we put up about cancellations last week. So let's do SP Space Symposium, and then we'll get to that. Here we go.
So, back in 1959, there wasn't too much activity going on in the space realm. I mean, there was a lot of activity, but there were not a lot of launches. Definitely not every 24 hours like Elon Musk wants to do, that's for sure. But in 1979, in January 2nd, actually, 1959, the Soviets launched Luna 1. And I teased this the last time that we had an SP Space Symposium. But why is Luna 1 important? It was because it was the first spacecraft to actually reach the moon. Now, the spacecraft was sphere-shaped, just like Sputnik was. It had 5 antennae that extended from it. It had instrument ports that protruded from the surface of the sphere. There were no propulsion systems on the spacecraft itself because of its high velocity, though. It announced it had a package of various metallic emblems on the Soviet coat of arms, and it was concluded that Luna 1 was intended to impact the moon. The Soviets never actually stated that, but seems as though Luna 2 actually accomplished that, which we'll talk about next time. It's probably true, and they just missed the mark their first try out. But it did zoom past the moon at a distance of 3,725 miles. That's about the continent of the United States across, right? So it did that after 34 hours, and it became the first spacecraft to go from Earth into an orbit around our sun. It's called a heliocentric orbit, and it's not orbiting around the Earth. It's not orbiting around the moon. It's orbiting around the sun. So a cool feature, though, of Luna 1, in addition to its driving by the moon, was its release on January 3rd, 1959, of a large glowing orange trail of gas. Now, this gas was visible over the Indian Ocean with the brightness of a sixth magnitude. That's basically the faintest star that you can see with your eye alone. Now, the gas turned out to be made of sodium vapor, and it let astronomers track the spacecraft. It also served as an experiment on the behavior of gas in outer space, because before that, we just didn't know what was going on in outer space. Now, on its journey to the moon, this spacecraft also picked up new data on the Earth's mysterious Van Allen radiation belts, which was, as we've discussed before, a zone of charged particles held in place by the Earth's magnetic field, which had only been discovered the year before, and we've previously talked about that with the Explorer satellite. Now, it was launched from the Baikonur Cosmodrome aboard a Luna rocket. Now, it was approximately 800 pounds, which, by the way, I looked this up, is the same as an engine and a transmission on a 2018 GMC Sierra 4x4.
Of course it is.
And Steven is holding up his GMC keyring. So he has a GMC. I do not. Although he does not have a GMC truck.
No, that's true. I don't have a truck. No, not yet. Not yet. But, you know, if there's anything your product placement has done is convince me that I should definitely buy one.
I think everybody should, actually. They're really neat vehicles. So, yeah. So the transmission and engine was the same mass as this. So that's actually pretty heavy for them to be lofting into space to begin with and to be lofting to the moon. So hats off to the Soviets there. Now, the primary objectives of the mission were to measure temperature and pressure inside the vehicle, study the gas components of interplanetary matter, and radiation of the sun, measure the magnetic fields of the Earth and the moon, study meteoric particles in space, because that was a big deal back then. It's like, how many meteorites are out there that are going to impact us? How dangerous is it going to be for human space travel? That was a big thing back then. And it was also going to study the disruption of heavy nuclei in cosmic radiation and other properties of cosmic rays. Now, the spacecraft itself had different transmitters on it. It had a 19.993 megahertz system, which transmitted signals of 50.9 second duration. It also had a 183.6 megahertz transmission for tracking purposes, and it also had a 70.2 megahertz transmitter. As I said before, it had four whip antennas, and it had one rigid antenna that was mounted on the sphere to provide the communications link back to Earth. The power was supplied by mercury oxide batteries and silver zinc accumulators. The silver zinc accumulators are a step up in the batteries on the spacecraft, and mercury oxide batteries had been used in most of the spacecraft before. There were five sets of scientific devices for studying interplanetary space, including a magnetometer, a Geiger counter, a scintillating counter, a micrometeorite detector, and then other various equipment. And as we said before, a large 1 kilogram cloud of sodium gas was released by the spacecraft. And this was seen by astronomers that could see the spacecraft in the field of view from the Indian Ocean. So how long did this thing last? We don't know. Why don't we know? Because the Soviet Union, just like Sputnik, was a little bit secretive of it. And yes, they did announce to the world that Sputnik was up there, but they didn't say anything of what was going on with the spacecraft. So I have no idea how long this thing actually functioned for. So it's still up there. It's still orbiting around. So this could be our Vigor. It could be Luna 1.
Vigor. Let me ask you this, Stargate Pioneer.
Quest.
You had mentioned something about going around our sun, right?
Yep.
How many just miles? Like we are right now. How many miles would that have been driving on a GMZ Sierra?
I'm starting to think. Wow. I'll have to get back to you on that. It's been a while since I've done those calculations.
Well, yeah, disappointed us. And there goes your sponsorship, by the way. So, you know, they told me if you had guessed that or had that answer on deck, they would have absolutely had sponsored you. Now you just throw it away. Well, I could tell you
in terms of AUs. So we're one AU away from the sun, right?
And as a GMC Sierra driver, I don't care about AUs. Sorry, fail.
You should care about AUs because Starman is doing AUs right now.
I don't care about AUs. Said it here first.
But what is wrong with you? You don't care about the royalty. You don't care about AUs. You are just a flat earther.
I'm going to buy a Ford just to spite you.
Go ahead. Be my guest. Fix or repair daily. Trust me, I've done that once before.
You know what's weird, though? You mentioned that there was not a lot of information about that. It's surprising that we still don't have, you know, a ton of information. That's
weird.
It is
surprising indeed. I suspect that it didn't last very long, and they just want us to think that it lasted longer than it. I mean, it's not still out there operating. It had no solar panels or anything on board, and the electric components on board are probably dust right now. But it could have lasted longer. I think it didn't, though. Otherwise... And it was a failure for them, too, because they were trying to hit the moon and they didn't. So I think it's a success because they actually got it out of the Earth and moon orbit. So it depends on how you look at it. They probably looked at it as a failure, though.
I heard that things not lasting as long as they'd like is a common trait with the Russians.
That's between you and Putin.
Not sure what you're talking about. I was talking about space stuff. In general, that's what I was talking about.
You know what? The main component of the International Space Station, the thing that has been up there the longest, was Russian-made, buddy.
Allegedly.
Oh, my gosh.
starting the rumor right here, right now. That's for you, Bandrew. That's for you. Thanks very much for sharing that with us again, Stargate Pioneer. We do always appreciate when you do an edition of SP Space Symposium. SP Space Symposium, like I've said, and I'll say this every single time, I think it's a very important aspect of the GunnaGeek.com show because it's talking about space, and I think it's important that we keep things being discussed about space so that we can just, as a society, embrace space development, because let's be honest, we got to get off this rock one day.
Somebody's going to have to. Yeah.
Chris, do you have any questions for SP before we get to the poll?
Why don't we talk about other GMC vehicles? Why is it just the GMC Sierra?
It's a good question.
Oh, it's so useful, right? So it's a big 8-cylinder truck. It's got 6 passengers. It's got, you know, the bed, and, you know, a half ton is what I want, but you can get them up to 3/4 ton and 1 ton. So, I mean, it's a very versatile thing.
Cool. Cool. So we did that. Let's
so
do this.
So my check better be in the mail, GMC.
Last week we had Michelle Ely on the episode. You should definitely check that out at geeks.link/239. We had a good discussion about cancellations and renewals in the world of television, so please do check that out. And thanks again to Michelle for coming on last week, filling in and doing all of that work. And out of that discussion, I decided to post a poll on Twitter that said the following: if you could pick one of the following items to be canceled, which would it be? And it was only 3 choices. I only give 3 choices. They're the 3 we kind of talked about last week. First was Arrow. Second was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And the third was The Big Bang Theory. And we had, with 0%, good news, FB. Nobody said Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. out of those 3. Everybody loved it, so 0%. We had 10% for Arrow. And a whopping 90% on Twitter said The Big Bang Theory. Very, very interesting
Guys,
results.
The Big Bang Theory gets 15 million viewers per week regularly.
There's no way
that CBS is going to cancel that. Well, I mean, you might not enjoy it. I enjoy it. I still watch it. I think it's funny.
I got to say that I was surprised to see 90%. I put that out there just because we talked briefly about it last week, but I actually thought for sure that that was going to be the 0%er, just because of the world of Twitter. I thought that there was going to be nothing.
No way, man. Our audience is the kind that would fall in that for the most part don't see the Big Bang Theory in its current incarnation of really being good. It went from a show that kind of celebrated all the things of geek humor and geek culture to one that then points and laughs at it more often than not.
Okay. You guys obviously didn't see this season because you had Will Wheaton and Mark Hamill at a wedding for the season finale.
I could count on one hand the amount of episodes of Big Bang Theory I've ever watched. And I probably only need half of that. So there you go.
I just enjoy it, guys. And I'm sorry that you don't, but I do. And a lot of other people enjoy it, too.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that people don't. I'm just saying for me, it was never my cup of tea. But you weren't here for the discussion last week, SP, so I thought we would take a bit of time here as well for you to sort of run down your thoughts on what's happening in the world of cancellations. We're not going to go down everything, but what's sort of on your mind as far as you maybe letdowns for renewals or cancellations or maybe just celebrations that you've got for that?
Well, the one letdown I had that was... The big reason why I stopped watching brand new shows and put that 3-season rule into effect with sci-fi, because they
and
have
let's
done...
Let's go ahead and recap that for the viewers and listeners in case they're not familiar with what your rule is.
Well, I was just going to say what it was. So sci-fi has a penchant for canceling shows that I like as they're gaining steam after 3 seasons. So I'm like, I need to watch a show that has made it to 3 seasons before it makes it my time to makes it worth my time to actually go and watch, because I don't want to watch crap that just disappears in a couple of years. I want to watch long lasting stuff. And so Defiance, I had a podcast on Defiance called Voices of Defiance. When Defiance was canceled, that was a major blow, and they didn't really replace it with anything. And then they replaced it with Dark Matter, which they then canceled. And I was like, oh, I don't want to watch any sci-fi again. But then I saw The Expanse. I was like, I love the show, so I'm going to watch it. And then what does sci-fi do after 3 seasons? They cancel it. So my rule is a show has to have a successful 3 seasons before I will watch it from now on. So if there's a new show on, like The Orville, I'm not going to watch it until it's 3 seasons in. So The Expanse, that was a huge disappointment for me. And I know there's talks ongoing with both Amazon Prime and Netflix right now. So there is still some hope. And I think it belongs on one of those services, to be honest with you, because I don't think sci-fi. I took a look at the ratings. I never looked at the ratings of The Expanse. I took a look at the ratings. It's getting 0.5. No wonder they canceled it. It was too expensive of a show to run with 0.5. Now, if it got 15 million, like Big Bang Theory, you know that it would have kept it going. But no, it's only 0.5. So I don't blame them. But at the same time, you got to put good content out there. Nobody's going to go to your channel anymore. Like Krypton, I haven't seen a single episode of Krypton. I don't want to because it's on sci-fi.
Yeah, I got to say that I've not watched it, but from everybody that's talked to me who has watched it, I was surprised to see it go. But from what I've gathered, I agree. I think it'd be right at home for a streaming service. I think it's that sort of content. So I'd like to actually see it not go to Netflix. I know a lot that's sort of blasphemy, but some of these other companies might give it more longevity if it's not really getting the Netflix power, like maybe Amazon, who has had some good hits on there, but also isn't known as, quote, the Netflix. They might be a good fit for it.
But the thing is, Netflix is putting a lot of money into sci-fi right now. I mean, with Altered Carbon, Lost in Space Season 2, and a bunch of the newer originals, they're putting a lot of emphasis on sci-fi. That's a market they're trying to corner. And if I'm an executive at SIFI, I'm probably going, uh-oh.
Yeah, fair. Yeah,
I think NBC is going to have to fold that channel at some point in time. Because they even on their main channel, they can't keep anything going like Timeless. We'll leave that out of this discussion. Alex, Inc., I'm not disappointed that that was canceled. I watched maybe a couple of episodes. And I was like, this show is not for me, even though it's about podcasting. It's really not about podcasting. It was a decent sitcom, but it was trying to be too many things. So I'm just talking about it on a podcast. Okay. You know, I'm not disappointed. Scorpion. And I think you guys talked about it last week. Scorpion. I'm not going to miss that show at all. Left that show after the first season. It wasn't for me. It never would have been for me. So I don't even know where the storyline is with the characters. Don't care. Just glad to see that one go. I'm guessing you guys talked about the CW quite a bit last week.
We did. And yeah. I wanted to get your take specifically on the Arrow renewal, as well as, of course, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. renewal. I wanted to get your take on those two.
Okay, so it's kind of funny because they both got renewed. And I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., their last episode, actually could have been a series finale.
It was totally written as a series finale. And I will argue with anybody that says otherwise.
The writers said it could act as one.
Yeah, and I would have been fine. They could have changed a couple of things about it to close up storylines instead of leaving a couple of trailers out there. But yeah, I totally could have been a series finale. And then they got another series. I'm like, oh, why do we have to do this? I just hope they don't ruin the show. I mean, I love the show and it has not been bad. Matter of fact, this might've been the strongest season. I'm just worried that it's going to take a little dip. And I'm also worried that they had to wait a year to get around the whole Infinity War thing. So it's like, people are going to forget about it. And it's going to be summer 2019. And it wasn't getting all that great ratings. I mean, it's a great show, but it wasn't getting all that great ratings. So I think this was another one that Disney stepped in and said, we need to have this show. We'll see what next summer and the shorter season gets them. I believe that they'll do great things. It's just a question of, I don't know what they're, well, I know what they're going to do because they set up the story, but I just hope that they can carry it through all 13 episodes.
Yeah, we touched on a little last week. I think part of the reason Disney's keeping that around is it does well internationally and it does really well streaming. So while the live TV ratings aren't great, the after the fact views has eyes, and it has ABC being like, look, we're tied to the MCU. We know you guys like comic book movies. We're sort of tied to that.
Now, conversely, you asked me about Arrow too. Conversely, Arrow was not written as a series finale. No. And it should have been written like a series finale because that show is just flailing big time in terms of ratings, in terms of story arc and everything. I hope that the new showrunner, Beth Schwartz, can turn it around next year. We will see. I think they got a full episode count. I haven't heard the episode count yet. So we'll see in the fall what actually happens. They are moving to Monday nights.
Yes.
And that might help because that Thursday night time spot was a death spiral for that show.
And for me personally, I'm happy about that because of the fact that it means that I'm not ending my CW week on Arrow. I would much rather not end it on
Arrow.
That's
fair. That's fair.
I do like the new Sunday night on CW because that'll bring Charmed and Supergirl back to back. I think that'll be a good audience for Sunday night. And it might be a good family TV night for us, too, because I'm the only one that hasn't watched Charmed from front to back in this household. Everybody else has. So
I look forward to the prospect of watching The Walking Dead followed by Supergirl. I just think that it's just going to mesh beautifully.
I think there's been a significant pushback against The Walking Dead from the audience that would go to Supergirl and Charm. So I think it'll work out just fine. There's enough TV audience between the two. Even though The Walking Dead gets phenomenal numbers, I think there's enough for CW to be successful on Sunday night. And other than that, you know, I don't see too many shows that I'm interested in watching. I mean, Orville, if it continues, yeah, that'd be great. But I'm looking through all this going, I don't know. I mean, The Gifted, I kind of enjoyed. It was the one thing that I broke with my three-season rule, by the way, The Gifted, just because of Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. and was halfway decent. But I worry where that show's going to go from now on. So I don't want to take up too much time here because you guys talked about it last week. But that was my thing. And Steven, I think you're signaling me for the one renewal that I should have been talking about, which was Last Man Standing.
Absolutely. And for the video viewers and the audio viewers who don't know what's going on, SP, go ahead and explain what the chime tie-in is.
Okay, so on Last Man Standing in their last season, two of the son-in-laws, I guess that's the way to call them, were the son-in-laws?
Yeah, Steven? It was the son-in-law. It was the son-in-law, I think, and...
The son-in-law and then some guy that could have been a son-in-law. Anyway,
I think so. I don't know, something like that.
So it was two adult males, not older males, younger adult males on the show that started a podcast called Villains and Vegans. And they had all their practical sound effects, including wind chimes. And I found the wind chimes on Amazon and actually bought Steven and I a pair because we podcast like Villains and Vegans. So why not? And it's great. I wonder if they're going to bring back the podcast in the next season because they're switching networks and I don't know what's going to change between the two. They're probably going to have to create new sets, right? Because the old sets were taken down. So who knows what's going to happen?
They probably put them in storage. They probably were hoping. If not, whatever. You saw they rebuilt Roseanne's set how many years later? They can do this that probably still has the virtual blueprints readily available. So it's not going to be a hard. It's not going to be hard at all.
It was kind of funny because on Last Man Standing, they actually rebuilt Tim the Toolman Taylor's house back again.
Yes, they did. They did.
So that was a funny couple of episodes.
Absolutely. So thanks for chiming in here, SB. I know it kind of put you in the hot seat, but I did want to get your take, especially because Arrow is the most amazing television on television.
You really want to be quoted as saying such?
No, I definitely don't.
Because I keep warning Chris. I mean, he claims to be the biggest Laurel Lance supporter out there.
And I'm just like, I love Laurel. She's the best. I love Laurel. Give me more.
Chris, you don't want to be quoted saying that.
All right. Well, there you go. So for episode number 240 of the official GunnaGeek.com show, I'm Steven John Drew. I am playing with my... chimes.
And I'm SP saying, cheers, guys. It's summer. Drink up.
I was going to have some kind of pun, but I lost it. I'm Chris. See you guys next week.
Bye. Oh, by the way, no royals. No royals, please.
What?
You are under their rule.
Thanks for checking out another episode of the official GunnaGeek.com show. If you liked the show, please give us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts or a thumbs up on YouTube. You can always join us for our live recording sessions, which stream Mondays at 8:45 p.m. Eastern at www.geeks.live. And remember, you can find our full back catalog at GunnaGeek.com/show. If you're itching for more geeky content, check out other shows on GunnaGeekNetwork.com. Voice work was by Emily Prokop of the Story Behind podcast. That's it for this episode. We hope to see you back again next week.